Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I've never really gotten a firm explanation for why Trump's shoes fell off during the shooting. But what I did learn is this. Trump's loyal aides, Walt and Nauta, started to buy self-tying shoes for Trump on Amazon. And so the tying, the shoes, like the laces that you needed to tie, those were removed. And in place of them were these self-tying laces. I don't know if that's why the shoes fell off.
Alex Eisenstadt is one of the best reporters in the swamp, and he's out with a new book, Revenge, the Inside Story of Trump's Return to Power. That word, revenge, plays such an important role in the Trump administration. As perceived enemies get their security clearances taken away, Secret Service is stripped, and jobs, well, people are getting fired. Alex brings you everywhere Trump went on the campaign, from Mar-a-Lago to the New York City courtroom, and he joins me to talk about all of that and more. We begin our conversation with the Butler rally, but stay until the end because we close with a fascinating story about his clothes and shoes from that day. Here's Alex. Alex, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
So there were so many amazing parts of this book, but I want you to take me back to Butler, Pennsylvania during the summer. Donald Trump is in his hospital room after getting shot, and he's looking at pictures from just hours before. Of the bullet whizzing by his head. Can you tell me about that moment and that sequence of events and what it says about his fascination with imagery and looks?
Yeah. So Trump is sitting in his hospital room. He is, you know, recapping, talking with aides about what happened during that day. And one of them show him a picture of one of those famous pictures of him raising his fist. And Trump looks at it and says, that is the most iconic, most American photo I've ever seen. And Trump, in that moment, it really encapsulates how Trump sees things through imagery. He understood in that moment that that photo would come to shape the campaign and potentially its legacy for years to come. And throughout the book, one of the major threads is how Trump used choreography and how he used imagery to win this race. And so in that moment, it really encapsulated that idea.
And we saw him at the Kennedy Center the other day with his hands up top, making sure that Doug Mills from the New York Times got that photo as well.
Absolutely.
And so when someone is shot at, PTSD is often associated with it, and it comes after people on the battlefield suffer from PTSD quite often. What did people around Trump say after he was shot? Did he suffer from symptoms of PTSD?
Sure. So right after Trump was shot, he went through, let's go right up to what happened in the preceding him getting shot. He has this debate against Joe Biden. Biden craters. There's talk about Biden ending his candidacy. And then Butler happens. And so Trump comes out of Butler. He goes into the convention and he is treated like Julius Caesar. Trump comes out of the convention, and a couple days after the convention, Biden drops out, and Kamala Harris is anointed as the Democratic nominee. You went from Trump having this extraordinary lead in the race to Trump then getting shot, nearly dying, and the race being upended, and these dual events really shook him to his core. Privately, he expressed a lot more unease about what happened in Butler than he let on publicly. The morning after the shooting, he was talking to a former aide, and he said, if that bullet had come within a hair closer, my head would have exploded like a watermelon live on television. But after Kamala Harris got into the race, he went through one of the most turbulent, probably the most turbulent one-month periods in the race that he had. And a lot of friends saw behavior of his where, you know, he went off the rails at an event in Georgia where he went after the sitting governor, Brian Kemp. He had an event at the National Association of Black Journalists where he used very racially loaded language. And a lot of his friends saw a candidate who previously for him had actually been fairly disciplined, fairly on message for Trump, that is, to a candidate who after the shooting really kind of lost control. And some of his friends wondered about his emotional state after he was shot and whether that might have explained some of his behavior.
And so
and I want to say understandably so when we're talking about him being shaken by the shooting.
100%. And so right after the shooting, he has about a day or two, I think it was 36 hours to decide about his vice presidential pick. I guess he could have taken longer if he wanted, but that was the time frame that the campaign right. wanted. Does any of your reporting suggest that J.D. Vance would not have gotten the VP pick had Butler not happened the way it happened?
I don't think so. I think that as Trump had left for Butler, he had pretty much settled on J.D. Vance. Although I will say one thing, which is that on the flight to Butler, Trump had actually raised the prospect of picking Maria Bartiromo, the Fox business host. But that was not terribly, that was immediately dismissed by Susie Wiles. She made it clear that's not going to happen. But I think that Trump was going to pick J.D. Vance regardless. I will say that one of the people who stepped in to go to bat for Vance right after the shooting was none other than Elon Musk. And as some of your listeners will remember, Elon Musk endorses Trump just hours after the Butler shooting that evening. Shortly after, Musk has a call with Trump, and Musk puts in an ask for J.D. Vance. And Musk tells Trump, if you pick someone who hails from the establishment wing of the party, in other words, someone other than Vance, it's going to give the establishment more incentive to try to kill you again. And so was Musk the final, you know, the person who made that choice that got Trump to that choice of Vance? Probably not. But, you know, Musk was a voice in the end.
And so Musk is a huge voice, obviously, right now in the administration, much more so than Rupert Murdoch was during the first Trump term. But, you know, in both Trump 1 and Trump 2, he seems to have these powerful media executives on his side. Can you talk to me about the relationship between Trump and Murdoch? I know that you wrote about Hannity trying to mend that relationship, and talk to me about where it stands today.
Sure. So Trump and Rupert Murdoch have about as complicated a relationship as it gets, right? Trump has always wanted, for as much as Trump attacks elites, he's always really wanted the approval of elites. And who embodies the elite class more than Rupert Murdoch, right? And Trump and Rupert Murdoch never really liked Trump very much. He saw him, he told someone, you know, at one point, he's so cloying, he's so gross. And after Trump lost the election in 2020, Rupert Murdoch essentially dropped him like a hot rock. And you know, after Trump got in the race in 2024, after he announced his campaign in 2022, Rupert Murdoch's paper, the New York Post, put out a headline reading "Florida Man Announces for President," buried it, you know, within the paper. And so after Rupert did that, Trump bitterly complained, talking about how, quote unquote, how cold Rupert was. And it infuriated Trump that Rupert would speak to him like this. And also at that point, you have to remember that when Trump had announced, all the Fox News had moved on from him towards Ron DeSantis.
Totally.
It was only after Ron DeSantis had fizzled out that the New York Post and the Murdoch properties came back to Trump.
And the indictment, right?
Right.
The indictment against Trump really helped him skyrocket in the polls. And that's sort of when Absolutely. You saw Murdoch Media transfer their support.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You know, he had Fox News during Trump 1. He certainly has it in this second administration. But now we see the manosphere. We see podcasting. We see podcasters get on board with Trump.
Yep.
How did he recognize – it wasn't even fairly early, by the way. Podcasting has been around for a while, but politicians yep. haven't embraced it the way that he has. What was it that made it click for him that this is a way to – get more votes?
Sure. So Trump wasn't totally familiar with the whole podcasting space, at least initially. There was a point in the campaign, I have this vignette, where some aides are back at the campaign headquarters in West Palm Beach, and they have this idea, which is like, let's get Trump on a bunch of podcasts. We're talking about, you know, late summer, early fall. And so they call him up on the phone and they say, look, sir, we'd like to get you on these podcasts. And he says, well, call Barron. He's referring to his son, of course, and his high school age son. He's now at NYU. He was in high school at the time. And so the aides call Barron, and he gives them advice to have Trump go on Patrick Bet-David, who's this well-known conservative podcaster. And from there, they launch this very extensive podcast push. And one of the things I write in the book is that Brat Summer became Brofall. And Trump spent much of September and October going on podcasts like Joe Rogan, like Theo Vaughn. He really made the rounds and came to dominate this new media space. And as you know, as someone who does a podcast, you know how the power is shifting from traditional media in many ways towards newer media like podcasts. And so Trump really took advantage of that. And this is now a real issue that Democrats have that they're trying to reckon with, it, which is conservatives and, you know, adjacent conservative people like Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn, they're dominating this space, right? And Democrats are really far behind, but it's something that Trump definitely benefited from in those final months of the race.
And I recently had on someone who profiled Dana White, who talked about how he was kind of the bridge between Joe Rogan and Donald Trump. Who does Trump surround himself with? Dana White might be one of them. What sort of, you know, friends are in that Donald Trump inner circle?
Yeah, so, you know, he's got his aides, people who are really close to him, people like Susie Wiles. And then he's got friends like, you know, one of the people that's actually a really important player in this book and is now a really important player in this White House is a guy by the name of Steve Witkoff. Steve Witkoff is currently Trump's envoy to the Middle East. But that really understates his power and his influence in this administration. And, you know, he's a character in the book who they got to know each other in 1980s, New York, both New York real estate developers. Trump came to respect Witkoff. A lot of Trump's friends actually ditched him after January 6th, said they don't want to have anything to do with him anymore, stopped taking his phone calls, but not Witkoff. Witkoff never once asked Trump about his role on January 6th, and Trump really appreciated that. Their friendship continued to intensify over the course of the campaign to the point where it was Witkoff who was with Trump on the golf course in South Florida during the second assassination attempt. And Witkoff is now playing an important role in the administration. He is someone that Trump goes to for advice on any number of things. They talk all the time. They're golfing buddies. And Witkoff is now really helping to shape foreign policy, despite the fact that he doesn't really have foreign policy experience.
You mentioned there was a second assassination attempt. There was also this kind of looming threat last summer with Iran potentially trying to kill Donald Trump. You write about a decoy plane. Tell me about the steps that the Trump campaign took to make sure that everything would be safe.
Sure. So rewind to summer of 2024, post-second assassination attempt, Secret Service briefs Trump. And what they tell him is that the Iranians have teams of agents in the U.S. with access to surface-to-air missiles. Presumably, these missiles would be used to shoot down Trump's plane, better known as Trump Force One, upon either takeoff or landing. And so Trump and his team, his security apparatus, come up with a plan, which is that Trump is going to use a private plane, which is Steve Witkoff's Gulfstream G6. He is going to surreptitiously get on this plane to an event. He's going to take a motorcade to the plane. And then what they decide is that Trump Force One, which is very recognizable, it's got Trump lettering on it, they're not going to tell the other aides, but that other aides are going to get on Trump Force One and they're going to fly. And they're going to go there in their own motorcade and they're not going to be informed that Trump is not on that plane. So Trump gets on Witkoff's plane, the aides get on Trump Force One, the doors shut to Trump Force One, and lo and behold, Trump's not in the seat. So aides start asking questions. Where is Trump? That's when leadership gets up and says, look, folks, the former president's not going to be with us here today. This is just a preview of what's to come, of what we may do in the future. And the aides, as you can imagine, are freaked out by this. They're saying, what are we being used as bait here? And it just goes to show the level of fear and the extent to which security around Trump was taking extraordinary precautions to keep him safe from Iran.
Those aides are some of the most loyal aides in politics. Can you talk about some of those close workers, during the campaign and now in the administration?
Sure. So first among equals is Susie Wiles. She was co-campaign manager, chief of staff. Her other co-campaign manager, a guy by the name of Chris LaCivita, is not in the White House, but plays a hugely important role as an outside political advisor to Trump and managing hundreds of millions of dollars that are now in Trump's political war chest. And then you have other people who are very close to Susie Wiles. You have people like Taylor Budowick. You have people like Stephen Chung. And then there's, you have Stephen Miller, right, who plays an incredibly important role in shaping policy. Susie Wiles built, and this is important in terms of to understand how the White House is functioning, you have to understand the way the campaign functioned, which is Susie Wiles built an organized, functional, pretty much chaos and drama-free campaign with a few exceptions, it was more functional than anything Trump had in 2016. It's more functional than anything he had in 2020. And it's certainly more functional than the chaos and drama-ridden White House that he had, right? And so she brought a level of calm to this and functionality to the campaign, which she has now tried to bring to the White House. So she's brought her loyalists on board, that she centralized power around herself. And so it's not like the first White House where you have different factions who are all infighting and we're fighting against one another and we're leaking and we're pushing their own agendas. That's not happening this time around because Susie Wiles has brought in her loyalists.
And Chris LaCivita is now on the outside. Can you talk to me about, there's been some reporting about the relationship between Susie and Chris, that it might be icy. What have you learned?
Yeah, I mean, they both respect one another. They're both very different people. Chris is, he's a colorful character. He's outspoken. Anyone can follow his feed on X and can see that for themselves. Susie is someone who is the opposite, right? She's very low profile. She's not active on social media. So they're both very different people, but they both worked well with one another. Their partnership worked well on this campaign.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Now, the book is called Revenge. Just this past week, we saw Trump take revenge against law firms whom he deemed to be perceived as enemies. And then we saw Paul Weiss and Brad Karp, the head of Paul Weiss, capitulate and end up striking a deal with Trump where they would donate $40 million worth of legal services. Can you talk to me about, is this the blueprint that Trump sees when we're talking about revenge? Is this sort of revenge going to come through executive order and then you capitulate and strike some sort of deal?
Yeah, I think that revenge, you know, as I show in the book, was always a part of Trump's thinking in the campaign. Joe Biden attacked Trump during the race and said that Trump is going to bring back retribution and revenge to the White House. Trump privately joked about it, and he would say, there will be no revenge, there will be no retribution, wink, wink. And the revenge was the playbook during the campaign, and it was also the game plan for the administration. And he's followed through on that. And so, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is that Trump sees himself, he operates like an old school political boss. One of the people that he has admired privately is a guy by the name of Meade Esposito, who was an old school Brooklyn political boss from decades ago. And Esposito was someone who traded favors, and Trump takes a very transactional approach to politics. And so Trump believes that if you've wronged him, he has a right to get back at you. So that's how Trump sees politics.
Would you be surprised if he arrested and jailed enemies?
I don't see any evidence he would do that. I've never seen evidence that he would do that. But I do think he's willing to play politics in other ways.
I'm interested in what it's like to report on Trump World these days. Elon has said he wants an investigation into how reporting around his visit to the Pentagon leaked. We saw Todd Blanche launch an investigation into how reporting around Venezuelan migrants leaked. Is this creating, you know, a chilling effect amongst sources in Trump world, and has it become harder to penetrate, not just for you, but for the entire press corps?
I can't speak for other reporters, but what I can say is that there's always been certain people in any administration who are afraid to speak for fear of retribution. I think that certainly among more junior level staffers, there's a fear of talking to the press. And, you know, some of this I would also say when is for show. And what I mean by that is the conservative base, they want to hear people bash the press because there's extraordinary distrust and dislike among Trump's base towards the press. And so some of what you see, and this is not to excuse it, is a political strategy of turning the press into a punching bag.
I want to end with this anecdote from the book. Which is after, to bring it all back together, after the Butler rally when he's shot, his shirt is bloodied, his shoes come off, he's at the hospital. I believe he's just in a t-shirt or in his undergarment. And those clothes that we've all seen in the photos with blood, you know, running through them, they're taken, but they're preserved.
Right.
Can you talk about when we might see those clothes again?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. But what I will say is that as your listeners will remember, Trump lost his shoes during the shooting, and it wasn't until later that evening that an aide went back to the stage to go retrieve those shoes, which were still on stage. And those were brought back to him. And I've never really gotten a firm explanation for why Trump's shoes fell off during the shooting. But what I did learn is this, which is that at some point, one of Trump's loyal aides, a guy by the name of Walt Nauta, started to buy self-tying shoes for Trump on Amazon. And so the tying, the shoes, like the laces that you needed to tie, those were removed. And in place of them were these self-tying laces that I guess you could just get on Amazon. And so Trump was using those shoes. I don't know if that's why the shoes fell off. I don't know if they played any role at all, but I thought that was interesting.
And the shirt, I thought it was going to go to the museum.
Trump said that. I don't know the extent to which he was being serious, but it would make sense to me that Trump, if he were to have a presidential library, would certainly want it to go to the presidential library.
Well, Alex, thank you for joining me. This was a really interesting conversation, and everyone can buy Revenge wherever you buy your books.
Thank you. Congratulations on the show.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,